Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing new ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Questions. For the last 7 years, we have been exploring the work of Norman Doidge in neuroplasticity. The neuroplasticity of the brain. We've been talking about the recent discoveries on how your brain is ever-changing, not just dying as we once thought. Ever-changing, ever-growing, ever-learning. You can teach an old dog new tricks. You can. Last week, an article appeared by Diane Ackerman, who began talking about the brain on love. And here's what she said. Basically, in effect, she went over the whole idea of neuroplasticity, and she talked about what she called interpersonal neurobiology, a new phrase we have. My interpersonal neurobiology tells me that you're my kind of guy. You know, what's your interpersonal neurobiology reading? Maybe they should have them in colors. Well, mine is blue. How's yours? Well, mine is green. Well, there's shades off the same thing. Maybe we should get together. It draws its idea from a great discovery, and it has to start originally with the matching of the wonderful matching of your brain with its DNA. DNA is phenomenal. DNA is a wonderful thing. That in itself, you put two DNA together, you get some remarkable pairing, some remarkable stuff happens as a result of that. Okay, so one DNA learns from another DNA. It does in effect because the two of them are together. That's kind of interesting. One has a bad immune system, or maybe allergic to certain things, and the other is not. And these two DNA get together, and the person sends out a baby, and that baby is maybe no longer reacting to these elements because the baby may have resistance based on a strengthened immune system. So think about how this works. We choose mates. We select mates so that we could get past our own weaknesses. And according to nature, pass it on to the next generation. So we're not just picking the strongest, most handsome, muscle-bound, big-breasted people out there. We're picking the ones whose immune system will enhance our immune system when we meet them and get together with them. That's pretty smart, don't you think? The person you're attracted to transmits this information to you somehow. You know how they transmit it? Through the pheromones, through the smells. As one of our smell experts who happens to be in the studio, Lisa Arnone, who has been a fan for a while, knows about. So the smell factor, very, very important smell factor. That smell factor is so important, not only before you're born, because keep in mind, your father and your mother, whoever they were, smelled each other into your existence. One of them said, well, I need what you smell like. And the other one said, well, I need what you smell like. Two of them got together and you came out of it. Then later in life, as you grow up, you are now bonded with your mother, usually, and her smells. And her smells tell you you're safe, you're allowed to grow on your own, you can become independent. But her smells also tell you, stay close to me, I'm the kind of person you want to hang out with. So smells again convey, pheromones again convey a very important message. According to the interpersonal neurobiologists, new group, they now say, yes, we not only have this smell that is this factor, but there's an unconscious factor going on here telling us what is really good for us and what is not. So we choose mates based on improvement. Get this. Remember that lousy guy you picked up in the bar 3 years ago who you couldn't believe you wound up taking home and wound up having some kind of a tryst with, an affair with, and then it lasted like for four times. And you said, what was I thinking? Well, maybe you weren't thinking anything. Maybe you were smelling something. Maybe something was telling you you are going to gain something from this. Well, until now, we thought we were all attempting to do some improvement in our brain. Well, maybe there's another thing going on. Maybe we're trying to learn something such as what not to do. Did you ever think that about yourself? Maybe you pick a mate and you say, I think I was trying to choose what mate not to choose by making it so bad. The brain is a very funny thing. This is Armand DeMille with Linda Vanella. We're talking about the neuroplasticity of the brain, especially as it relates to interpersonal relationships and this new thing called interpersonal neurobiology. All the relationships change the brain, every relationship you have. If you want to leave your brain change all on its own, hide out in a cave. See, because if you hide out in a cave, then you are not going to get so influenced by other people. And there are many people who are like that. There's a group of people who just say, I'm not going to let anybody else in. I don't want to be affected by anyone else. Because when you finally spend time with someone else, what takes place between the two of you really begins to expand and change your brains. Maybe not in a way you want it to, but it does. Spending the night with someone, holding them overnight, right, is an amazingly long time to spend with someone, and things take place in the brain. And things change, and we change. There are people I know who get together with other people just to bond, just to be held, because that in itself is automatically brain-changing, brain-enhancing at times. So let's go back into this whole concept of this. What do you think of this stuff, Linda?
I think it's phenomenal. I think it's exciting, and I think it gives us a new way of looking at the power that relationships offer us and the challenges. And I think it expands the notion that the brain was just a little bit of a thing that we were born with, and it kind of got stuck at our childhood imprinting. But now we see that it's ever growing and therefore ever changing and ever learning. So I think it's exciting.
Ever growing, it means ever learning. Doesn't necessarily mean to the good.
No.
Well, how would it be learning to the negative?
Well, I don't think it could ever be negative, because whatever you're learning can only help you to pursue your life in a better way. So maybe what you're attending to might not be positive, it might be negative, but there again, there's a learning going on right there. You're beginning to see that it's negative. So therefore, there's a new awareness that perhaps something that originally was you weren't conscious of, you're now better conscious of and more aware of.
I fully understand your point, but I'm not sure I totally agree. I think that there are people who are meant to be the expendable ones, and they destroy themselves, and they somehow see themselves as on the wrong track, and they get together with people and they wind up having a sour relationship, and they have fewer and fewer offsprings, and the offsprings are less and less functional. So I think there are generations of people and individual people who do or actually eliminate themselves. Now, I think this is true when you think about sperm. When you think about the 300, 200 million sperm that are out there shooting for one egg, right? There's only one sperm that makes it to the egg. You know what the other sperm do? They get exhausted. They lay down to be tread on by the other sperm. They become foothold for that sperm that's going to make it to the egg. So I believe there are people who, in effect, sacrifice their generations by saying, I'm going to repeat the patterns of the past. I'm not going to challenge them. In fact, I'm going to make them even worse, as we've seen with some people. And then there are other people who select differently may come from the very same family model and say, I'm not going to repeat the past. I'm going to do it different. And some of those who attempt to do it differently succeed. And some who attempt to do it differently don't succeed. Now, the ones who don't succeed, they don't reproduce. The ones who do, I mean, they do reproduce. They could reproduce badly, you know, Bentley. It's like, let's try communal living. Let's try Eskimo living. Let's try something unusual. It may work, but it may not work. Also, when it doesn't work, it could work really badly. So then let's try open sexual living, right? That could work, and it could not work. When it does work, it moves people on to another level. When it doesn't work, it eliminates a group of people. So I think we're kind of like, many of us are like trees in a forest. I think we find ourselves overcrowding and we set fire to ourselves, and that we have no consciousness about it. I think what we basically do is say, I haven't made it. I'm going to choose badly and live badly. And that's why you have so many friends who you could ask, well, why aren't you doing better? And they could look at you and say, because I love them. Because this is the best I have. Mainly, there's nothing wrong with choosing that way. You could choose that way. There's nothing wrong with you making a choice to not live any better than you're living. And there are alternatives. Armando Mill with Linda Vanello. We're talking about the neurobiology of the brain. Do you know, if you knew how much your brain could change, if you just knew the difference between having a dinner and listening to music when the dinner lasts 5 minutes, as opposed to having a dinner and watching a TV show when the TV show lasts an hour and a half, I'll make you bet if you judge the number of calories consumed, the amount of exercise done, the amount of communication that takes place, you're going to kind of, you know, move to the side of, you know, that five-minute dinner is not such a bad idea with the music. Because the TV contact may not be the right one for us right now. It may not be the best way for us to go. So what helps your brain change to the positive? What makes your change move, makes your brain move towards a more positive brain? How can you let yourself, your brain, grow? Do you think it's important to put fertilizer on your brain to help it grow more? What do you? It's a funny word. I'm afraid to use it. You know, you don't want to put fertilizer on your brain, but you want to fertilize your brain somehow so that it'll grow. So let's say you put yourself in school. A very good idea for almost anyone, no matter what your age is. Go back to school. You sit in a classroom. What are you doing in that classroom? Nothing. Let's say you're learning the problems of the pottery in Polynesia in your first class on anthropology. What do you want to learn this for? You don't. But the learning experience does something for the brain. The brain learns a little better. A little more. The brain shows you we could pick up information, and along with that, the brain moves into a learning place. So you want your brain to be learning and open to learning at all times. Schooling is one of the ways of doing it. Going to take a class is a great thing. Taking classes, I think, is wonderful. Learning to talk and have a conversation that has meaning. Boy, that's another tough one, and that's really tough. To have a conversation where both people want to hear it. Usually, if it's a typical couple, the woman wants to talk and the man doesn't want to hear it. He'd rather watch television because he doesn't want to hear anything that's going to be said. Because whatever it is that's being said, it's going to wind up with something being wrong with him and something he has to change. And he says, I don't want to hear it. Let me be. So he doesn't want to hear it, but learning to have a place where both people are willing to listen and be present and feel safe and feel comfortable and to feel loving. That's really amazing to develop that. So couples usually develop that through physical intimacy, right? They have sex, they make love, they fall asleep, they keep quiet. And they develop much more of their brains when they're quiet than they do when they're talking. All the stuff you talk about generally does not activate the brain to a more fruitful learning place. But the stuff you do in silence, in the nurturing of an intimate relationship or holding someone else, there you learn a great deal. There you develop a great deal.
Yes, you not only learn a great deal, but according to this article, basically what she's saying, this Diane Ackerman, she said that it literally transforms you, that what we pay most attention to actually defines us. So when we're speaking about that nonverbal bonding, that closeness of people, those lovers that are together, whether it's the smell, the touch, the senses, that basically that the two are becoming transformed by this intimacy, by this relationship.
Armando with Linda Vanella, we're here with you today, Tuesday, which is a Tuesday, and we're usually here on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, but WBAI likes to have your brain be plastic. And the beautiful plasticity of the WBAI brain is for you to guess what Wednesday we're not with you. It's usually one Wednesday of the month. Well, for the sake of the neuroplasticity of your growing brain, we're going to give you a hint that it's tomorrow that we won't be here. But BAI likes to keep your brain growing. And we will be back on future Wednesdays. So we're here with you today, and we're asking this question, and we'll be taking your calls at 212-209-2900 in a little bit about this issue. Learning which one to feed. You know, it reminds me of that, the man who goes to his I think it was an Indian master or a Native American master, and he says, "Dear Father," he says, "one part of me is a wolf, and the other part of me is a what?" Do you remember what the other part of him was? One part is a wolf, and the other part is
a lamb. A lamb, peaceful.
A lamb?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, that's an interesting concept.
Looking at two different options.
Okay, so let's say he says, one part of me is a wolf, and the other part of me is a lamb. Which one will I become? And what does the master say?
The one which you feed.
Well, wait a minute. Does that mean if he feeds it, he's going to become a lamb?
Yes.
What warrior do you think, what Native American warrior can you imagine that wanted to become a lamb? Hey, let's call him Lamb. No, his name was Forcefoot, or his name was, you know, his name was Mighty Spear, or his name is Buffalo Head. Lamb? Well, either way, we want to choose a peaceful side and not the other side. The truth of it is, the part that you feed with your brain is the part that you actually become. So if you become an aggressor, and if all you do is spend your life pursuing sex, right, drugs and rock and roll, fun for you, fabulous. But your brain does grow in that direction. You do become sex, drugs, and rock and roll. That's it, and that sends out all that brain chemistry, and that's how you grow, and that's what you open doors to. And then when someone comes along and says, hey, you want to hear this interesting concept about neuroplasticity? You say, no, get out those orange barrels. Let's, you know, do something else. Whereas if you're in an atmosphere where you say to yourself, I really want to have a future and a future life, and I do want to be growing in my life, you choose not a partner that you're going to change. You choose not a partner that you're going to be angry with all the time. And you choose to be at peace with someone and try to see if you can make that work. Now, the disadvantage of being at peace with someone else is it doesn't have the normal fire that relationships have. So you have to go through all your fiery relationships. You know, the real dramatic, fiery ones before you're ready to settle down to one that's not necessarily fire, but one that is more lamb-like, as some of our people would say. 212-209-2900.
It's interesting, Oman, because I think while you're saying it, you know, even that, this Diane Ackerman, she says, every great love affair begins with a scream. She reverts and she makes note of, at birth, the screaming baby and the relationship to the immediate caregiver. And I think that's so powerful when you describe how lovers and love relationships also have to have a scream to begin with. It's almost like that magnetic emotional kind of charge that you oftentimes feel, and people will say, I fell in love, or I'm attracted to, or I get excited by, but relationship, and therefore what comes after that scream, is really the power that you're describing, I think, here.
You know, when two people become a couple, the brain extends its idea of self to include the other. Instead of that slender pronoun, I, a plural self emerges who can borrow some of the other's assets and strengths, and you become a we. A we feels bigger than two eyes. It really does. The immune system knows who we're not, and it stores pieces of invaders as memory aids. We can actually learn pieces of immunity from our partners. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air with us. This is Armand DeMille with Linda Vanella.
Hi.
Hi there.
How are you today?
Good. Glad to get you on.
Yes, I was immediately drawn in from your first sentences today when you started to talk about what we smell, what we're unconscious of smelling.
Yep.
That is how I got married. I was dating a guy, and one night he was kissing me, and I swear I smelled something. I just sensed a smell coming off of him, and I was hooked. It was like I was hooked on him.
Like ambrosia. It was like,
yes.
It was like this incredible, deep, musky, unremarkable, unidentifiable, unrepeatable smell, right?
Absolutely. I couldn't get enough. I couldn't get close enough to his face. And we got married, and it was a very passionate relationship, and it was a very, he was, when you went on to talk further about what happens when two people are sleeping, and, you know, the important stuff that goes on between two people that are just close and holding each other in their sleep, we didn't have that. And
you didn't have that, why? Because you slept in different beds?
No, he was just not affectionate.
So did you sleep away from his body?
No, we slept in the same bed, but he wouldn't touch me or hold me.
So how do you think you felt connected to him? You stayed connected to him?
Through sex.
And through something else. And your nose. You kept him, not only did you have sex, you kept him sexually active, and you've kept him squirting out all his juices through his armpits and his ears so that he smelled enough so that you could smell him and you felt
and
safe.
I used to smell his laundry.
When absolutely.
When I was doing his laundry, I would be smelling his shirts because I felt so not connected to him. Even though I loved him, I knew that
even if you were connected, you probably would have smelled his shirts.
Probably.
You know? Probably. But he was a good smeller for you for a while.
And he was having affairs, and I think that's why he would not cuddle up to me.
Well, whatever the reason he wouldn't cuddle up to you, this is a man of magic smell, and probably there were many women out there smelling his t-shirts, you know what I mean? Probably he had that quality, and probably he had to move it around and couldn't sit still and couldn't get the benefit of it. I'm sorry for you that you had to go through the pain of it. What eventually happened?
What eventually happened was that he eventually got caught, and we had three children, and one of them is disabled, and, you know, I was in therapy with that son for a long, long time, and the therapist said to me, you know, you're a lot more upset about this than you need to be. What else is going on in your life? And, you know, the floodgates opened, and a few years later, you know, when he finally got caught, I was strong enough through the therapist, thank God, to just say, that's it, get out. And, of course, it was a horrible divorce. It was, you know, it took me a long, long time. Even though I initiated the divorce, it took me a really long time.
Sure, because you're still smelling your shirts. Absolutely. How difficult that is.
And I really never found that connection to another man.
No, that'll be there. That's very good. Very glad you bring it up. What's your first name?
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, that's really very fine that you bring it up. There are more people there with same with genetics that'll come through in the smell all over again. It'll happen for you. You'll be getting it. But it is rather remarkable when that magician does come along with that very special set just the way he had. Because it does result through sex, reproduction, and a lot of passion and stuff like that. And it comes from somebody who generally is built to spread that around. You know, so he's probably
he
all
did
of,
that. Yeah.
He surely did. I'm sorry for you on one level. On another level for you, I'm very glad for you because you must have learned a great deal during that time and must have created some great beauty in your children, being such a sensitive person as you are.
Well, I feel like I'm a stronger person now than I was when I was in that marriage because he liked to keep me, very controlled. He's very alpha male, and that's been my issue, is that I tend to be drawn to these alpha males. And now, you know, the other part of what you said before about getting to the point where it's, you're ready, you've had the passionate relationships and you're ready now for the calm relationship that doesn't have all these ups and downs. I feel like I'm ready for that, where I wouldn't have
You know, been. I know you are, but you know, the trouble with the beta males, or the males who don't have that kind of stuff going for them, is they don't have the smell as much. You know, they don't have that smell as much. They're usually less smelly. So I wish there'd be some guys in the middle.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe the only place to go meet guys is at a gym.
If I go out on a date, you know, I don't wear any perfume or cologne, and I pray that they're not drenched in it because I want to see if there's that natural attraction.
Good selection process. Very good selection. Maybe they should just send it to you in an email or something. You know, send me a cutout from the armpit of your T-shirt, and I'll let you know if I'm going to date you. You're great. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Love your show.
Thank you. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to be taking a short break shortly, then a little music, and then we will come back to you and we'll take more calls related to this stuff, even though it is painful. Love is such a painful thing. But because it's pain, it makes you sweat. And because it's pain and it makes you sweat, it makes you transmit. You know, I mean, it all seems like it's all part of the same thing. It's all a matter of learning. And that's what we're doing here on WBAR is we are learning. WBAI, we are learning all the time. We're trying to learn, and we're trying to teach. We're trying to teach ourselves, and we're trying to learn from each other. We will be back with you in just a few moments, my friends.
Body slam you to the ground, messaging a chill. Curses make the head go round, ring a certain thrill. Send you to another world, mesmerize your brain. It's the jewel of a pearl, makes you all insane. Man is supposed to be low. Yeah. Supposed to be low. body slam your partner now. Up against the wall, it's a sad and scary scene with no grace at all. And it's supposed to be low. Yes, it's supposed to be low. Well, it's supposed to be low. Say, cause it's all cause of low.
That's Io singing, and it's supposed to be love. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind with Linda Vanella. We're talking about brain plasticity and brain plasticity while you're in love and how love itself affects the mind and how it affects the changes of the mind. All right. But a loving touch is enough to change everything. A guy named James Cann, a neurologist at the University of Virginia, conducted experiments in 2006, in which here's what he did. He gave an electric shock to the ankles of women in happy, committed relationships. The test registered their anxiety before and the pain level during the shocks. So here's a guy who walks around giving electric shocks to women in love. What else are you going to do? Right? How are you going to spend your time? Shock them. Then they were shocked again, this time holding their loving partner's hand. The same level of electricity produced a significantly lower neural response throughout the brain. In troubled relationships, the protective effect didn't occur. If you're in a healthy relationship, holding your partner's hand is enough to subdue your blood pressure, ease your response to stress, improve your health, and soften physical pain. We alter one another's physiology and neural functioning by having a clear relationship. However, if it is a difficult relationship, it increases the amount of pain, which was kind of fascinating. 212-209-2900. Let's take another of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on WBAI.
Not yet.
212-209-2900. One can decide to be more attentive and compassionate partner. You could be more mindful of the other person's motives, hurts, and longings. Breaking habits isn't easy. Couples choose often to rewire their brains on purpose, but it's not easy to take one person in a couple and try to force them to rewire their brains. You know, it's like one of the comfortable things that people, one of the things that people think they could do. They could change the other person, make that change happen. Of course, that never happens because there'll always be a resistance to that.
I think, Armand, yes, you see this every day where couples will come in and they'll try to what they call help one another without calling it dependency or over-dependency. But sometimes people will come in and say, I want to help him get better. I want to help her heal. I want to help them overcome whatever habit or addiction they have. And so we'll see this in a loving way, trying to fuse, trying to come together with perhaps the strengths of one and the weaknesses of the other, without it becoming pathological or disturbing, but in some way positive and endearing to one another. And so we do see that it could work beneficially, but I think it's when someone feels that they're being forced to change and not being helped in a loving way that will oftentimes make them feel defensive. So, but yes, I do feel that that certainly can help when you have a partner when you're struggling with some kind of a challenge.
Well, how is it different than bringing up children? How is bringing up a husband different than bringing up children?
Well, you need a husband to bring up children.
In other words, if you treat your husband like a child, as most people do.
Well, I think the expectation may be a little bit different, and I think no man nor woman wants to be treated like a child. I think that as we grow into an adult life, we seek out to be mutually respected. And while we understand we may have weaknesses, when I feel that someone is speaking down to me or caring for me as though I was a child and helpless, it would, I think, automatically make me feel more defensive. Whereas if I felt I had a partner, whether it be raising our children or overcoming some kind of a challenge that we face, but we're doing it together as a partner of equal, then I think it would certainly endear me and support me and nurture me into wanting to help move forward.
It doesn't really answer the question. Isn't it easier to help your children develop than it is your husband? That's my question. Would you answer that?
Certainly, of course, because, yes, your role with your children is entirely different. So your child is seeking your advice.
You have power.
Yes.
You got the power. You got the control over your kid. You have the love that that kid needs.
And you have the responsibility.
As long as you could hold that out.
Sure.
As long as you could say, the reward is I'm going to give you kisses and love and pats on your head. That is a good thing. You get the kid to do what you wanted to do, and the kid will learn accordingly. But when you have a husband who's sick of your pats on the head, and you say to him, I've still got love to give out, he doesn't care anymore. You don't have that power anymore. And it's in that loss of power that it makes people move away from their relationship with their husbands to their relationships with their children. Now a relationship between mother and child exists that seems to be mutually, you know, growing, and everybody is growing in something, but it's exclusive of the father. It's exclusive of the dad. So it's a very difficult thing to do. It's very difficult all around. It's hard because as a mother, you get just swept into it. You know, you look for any place. Because as a mother, where is your love coming from? Your children. No longer from your husband. So where do you think you're going to go to get fed? From your children, not from your husband. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We're taking your calls today. We're talking about this brain development and brain changes. You know, I think that also happens with grandparenting. What do you think, Linda?
Yes, I think that there's, again, a role distinction that gives you a little bit of power. And so you would tend to want to care and encourage and support in a different way than you would with your husband. So yes, I think it also comes with a role of grandchildren. I think, yes, you're saying that it's also very endearing because of that, that you would feel more attracted to want to receive the love from your grandchildren. So yes, I think so.
You ready to join us? Well, this is interesting. Welcome.
Hi.
Your first words on WBAI.
Hi, Armand. Okay, what's the question?
I don't know. What's the question? What do you think of all this stuff? Tell anybody who you are.
I'm Lisa Arnone. I'm a psychotherapist. Been doing that for a long time. Work with couples, work with children and adults.
How do you feel being on the air right this minute?
Pretty good. My heart's beating a little fast, but
a little fast, huh? You've heard this studio, but you've never been in it.
Never been in
Tell
it.
Give you a history with it.
Okay.
Well, I've been listening to your show for a while, and I actually got the courage to call in about a year ago and spoke to you briefly. And then I was listening about a month ago, and I was wondering if I could ever somehow talk to you, really, or work with you. And you said into the radio, "We're always looking for associates here on A Positive Mind." And so just email me. So I emailed, and here I am.
And that was great.
That was a great moment.
That's great. You and I have some good stuff to do, especially around writing. I'm looking forward to that with you.
Me too.
And more radio stuff, too. Thank you.
Welcome.
Yes, they were always looking for associates. You can't imagine how many people come by who we wish, you know, they wish we could, but we just can't be with because they just ain't got the stuff. And the stuff is more a learning brain. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi there.
Hi. My name is Anna.
Hello, Anna.
I have a question going back to your brain chemistry and
yes.
smells. I seem to be very attracted to men where I have a very passionate type of connection with. And the last man I had that with, it didn't seem to work out. And I'm seeing someone now where the connection is not as passionate, but there's a steadiness there. And I find myself kind of getting a little bit bored.
Yeah, absolutely.
And even though I like his qualities, he's a very generous person, he's a little bit older than me, and I like his company very, very much, but I don't feel that spark.
That fire.
And I don't know if it's just because I really don't feel that spark with him or if I'm just missing that fiery passion that you were talking about and if I should hold on to it.
Both, because here, let's talk about it. Your brain is leading you in two places. Your brain is leading you to improve your species by mating with somebody who has an immune system different than yours.
Mm-hmm.
So your brain is sending you out to find different kinds of people and for you to feel sexually connected to them. It wants you to go fertilize some eggs with some guy who's got a lot of strength, muscle, aggression, mm-hmm. and will improve everything. So that's what your brain's doing. Your mind is saying, but wait a minute. If I do that, then what I'm going to do is repeat what I've done in the past.
Yes.
And your mind says, so you got to try to find somebody who is less like that, who's not going to just drive you in that direction. So your mind is saying one thing and your body is saying another thing. And this is a beautiful dialogue. Mm. Because if you could open the dialogue between both of you and honor both parts of you, this wouldn't be as much of a problem. Now, let's talk about the guy you're trying to be with.
Mm-hmm.
So the man you're going to be with, he's a little older. He's a little more protective. He's a little different.
Yes.
He's less fiery.
Yes.
And there's a discussion that could take place between you and him. And the discussion is the honesty. You can say to him, I need some spark in this relationship. I need you to do unexpected things and different things, if you can.
Hmm. I didn't even contemplate being upfront about it.
Yeah, I know. Nobody ever does.
Huh.
Nobody ever does. But just think about it. Think about the truth. Think about how the truth would fare.
Hmm.
If you're so afraid that the truth would hurt his ego and make him feel bad, then he's the wrong guy anyway.
You're right.
Because the guy you want has got good yuns.
Mm, absolutely, because I have them.
Yeah, and that's it. You want to have somebody who's got that.
Yeah. Yeah, I need someone to match me and sometimes exceed me, which is very difficult to find in men. Sometimes
well, but now let's talk about that. Let's talk about that exceeding you. So, yes, all right, now we go down to another issue. When you were little, right, your father, he liked your brother, didn't he?
Well, actually, to be frank with you, I'm an only child.
Yeah.
But I have a very close relationship with my father. Very.
Did your father like the girl in you or the boy in you?
Who? I'm sorry?
Did he like the girl in you or the boy in you?
My father liked the girl in me. I mean, he was very open. He was a very liberal father. Very, very open. Always told me things up front.
Yeah.
Very much so. My mother and I fought.
So you were always kind of at war with your mother. Now, let me ask you, your new boyfriend, would you say he's more like your father or your mother?
Oh, my father.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's more like my father, yeah.
And who was your other boyfriend like?
My other boyfriend was...
They're like your mother. They're like this confrontative, warlike being.
Yeah, he's more like my mother.
Yeah, so here's the battle we got going on. So with these other guys, you can have a lot of sexual stuff going on, a lot of passionate stuff going on.
Yes, and I miss that. I am a highly sexual person. Yeah. I have a large libido.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing about large libidos. They seem like they're in command for so long. But you'd be surprised. There are so many other elements that make that not take the center stage. But right now they do. So dialogue seems to be what's important. Honesty seems to be the only thing that's important. And not brutal honesty, because if you beat anybody into submission, they're not your kind of guy.
No.
So let's imagine a conversation where you came to me and you told me the truth, and I was the guy. All right? I'm your guy. Go ahead, tell me. Tell me what you want to tell me.
I would say to you that I definitely need a spark, a sexual spark with you, and I feel the beginnings of it. But I'd like that to grow, and I'd like to do other things with you, too, so that I have a mental spark. Because when I have a mental spark, the sexual side comes forward. So I'd like to go out with you and, you know, do things, go to museums, go to art shows, something.
Well, you see, I'm not just that way. That's not the way I am. I know what you want. I hear it. But I'm going to tell you, if you need those things, I'd like you to go find yourself some guy who's more like the way you want him to be. You see, I'm just me. And the way I am, I'm going to be a very loving, very attentive man. And I hear your needs. I mean, I certainly will bring you as many diverse things as I possibly can. And I certainly will consider that you need more activity. But I want you to know I am my own man. And I'm not going to change for you.
Oh, boy. You said a biggie right there.
But what did I say?
Not going to change for you. That hit a button.
Sure.
Boy, did that hit a button.
Now, just think about it. Was it a good button or a bad button?
Not such a great button.
Right.
No.
And you know the truth of it is, it's a wonderful button. Mm. It's just your kind of guy. The kind of guy you need is somebody who's going to say, no, I am who I am. I am who I am. I'm not going to be the way you want me to be.
Wow.
But you sound like you're really growing. I like this.
Yeah, I'm growing. I'm 41. I'm growing, all right. But I'm glad I called you. I listened to you for years and years and years, and I decided to pick up the phone. You were very helpful.
You know, you need what would be really good one day is for you to have a therapist who could take both of these voices. In fact, that's what Lisa does here, Lisa Arnone. You take both of these voices, and you isolate them so that they could have dialogues with you present without the other people present. It's a technique. It's a style called Gestalt therapy. It's a very interesting way of exploring this stuff.
How do I get in touch with her?
Just give a call to my office at any time.
Okay, I will.
Good to talk to you.
Thank you very much, Arnold.
Right.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye. 212-209-2900. Time for another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand?
Yes.
How are you?
Good.
Good. I didn't catch the beginning of your program, but I heard you talking about this last caller and talking about passion.
Now, yes.
I wanted to know, can passion be learned, or is it there or not there? You know, you...
Well, tell me, you're talking about yours or somebody else's?
Just in general. I mean, passion, if you do passion towards someone else, is it, you know, immediate, you know, you feel that spark, or can it be learned?
I think it's both ways. I think sometimes you feel the immediate spark,
mm-hmm.
And then sometimes there's another spark that you feel. It's not immediate, but it comes out of a much deeper, more genuine place.
Yes.
So I think both are possible. So I think just because it's not there at the beginning does not mean that it's never going to be there.
Okay.
You so got
don't
some,
give up hope if it...
No, don't give up hope. The main thing you need is you need variety. You need things to be changed, things not to repeat it. So what you need to do is to always bring in variation. So make things a little different every time.
So do you have to work at it so much, Armand?
No. Just a little bit.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
212-209-2900. Time for one more call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
I have a question with anxiety.
I want to talk to this guy right here. I'll talk to him.
That's you. Who can talk?
Yes. And I'm getting ready to take a test, and I always freeze up.
Sure, a lot of people do. Because of that.
You have me in a state where I don't want to do anything.
Yeah, you kind of freeze up.
I'm frozen.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. That test anxiety is a very, very common thing. Have you read anything about it or seen anything about it on the internet that tells you how to relax before you take the test?
No. I'm not supposed to relax before the test. It's just getting ready for it that gets me all antsy.
Yeah, yeah. It's common. Look on the internet on the test anxiety, and you'll find very good information about it. You can take a look at that. There are some yoga techniques that help specifically with that. I wish you the best of luck with it. I wish I had more time to talk to you about it, but I don't right now.
Thank you very much.
Sure, thank you. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We have to be going, and we will be back with you next Tuesday at 1 p.m., Bye-bye for now, my friends. You can write to me at thepositivemind.com or the website.